Welcome, one and all, to Big News Wednesday. And indeed, it will be. It will be big implications for the election Wednesday, okay? With some legal stuff and some crazy stuff on the side, some fun stuff. And all of that stuff will be accompanied by Sharon Reed. Sharon, how's it going? Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. I just feel like I've been blessed, a wonderful gift to just be here on this big News Wednesday.
Thank you. It's also, it's big Sharon Wednesday because Sharon's going to be here on this show and then also immediately afterward on Indisputable. So apologies to your voice. You're going to be talking a lot.
I thought you were going to apologize to those viewers out there.
No, I think that they are very excited. They are girding themselves for an awesome 3-ish hours of the news. Everyone prep for that because there's a lot to get to, including in the aftermath. So, you know, for the live audience, you can look forward to a state governor threatening to revoke athlete scholarships for one of the stupidest reasons I can imagine. True Social already experiencing quite a bit of threats to its financial stability, now being rocked by yet another lawsuit and horrible candidates and more. So lots to look forward to there. If you're on the podcast, for instance, you might think, well, wait, but that's not going to be in the podcast. How do I listen to it? And don't worry, it's okay. Go to youtube.com/thedamagereport and you can listen to all of those extra clips and bits of content that we put out. Subscribe there and you'll even get notifications and you'll help us reach our goal of 1 million subscribers by election day. So with all that said, do you think it's time to get into it, Sharon? You want to do this thing?
I wish I would have worn a dragon shirt, yes.
Okay, we're going to have to send you some dragon shirts. And with that, we will. Let's get into one of the most important stories of the week. There has been global outrage ever since it was announced that the IDF had killed 7 aid workers that were in Gaza distributing aid and supplies as part of the World Central Kitchen. And now a spokesperson for the IDF is trying to respond to those concerns that people have expressed in this video.
I want to be very clear. The strike was not carried out with the intention of harming WCK aid workers. It was a mistake that followed a misidentification at night during a war in a very complex conditions. It shouldn't have happened.
I can agree with that part of the statement. The rest of it, I take a bit of issue with. Described there by the spokesperson for the IDF as a mistake. But was it a mistake? And I don't mean was it a mistake or was it intentional? It wasn't a mistake. It was best case scenario, devil's advocate, many mistakes that all culminated in 7 people dying who were just there to save lives, to help people who are experiencing the unimaginable. And I want to run you through a few of the things that make these not just one mistake, but many mistakes that led to these deaths. So the World Central Kitchen put out a statement just yesterday, and they said that the team was traveling in a deconflicted zone. So this is an area that, look, Gaza's a war zone, but this is an area that was not experiencing active combat. So it's already an area where you should be far safer than in others. So that's mistake number one. Number two is they were in 2 armored cars and 1 unarmored vehicle. And those 2 armored cars, at the very least, were very clearly labeled as being aid vehicles. And they in particular had the World Central Kitchen logo on them, including on the roof. And as you'll see, that's where they were struck from. So that's number 2. They were dropping off more than 100 tons of food supplies at a warehouse. That's when the attack occurred. Mistake number 3, though, is that the movements of these 3 vehicles to get all of those supplies to the warehouse had already been coordinated with the Israeli military. So that's not even the end of the mistakes, but let's catch up there. So you have aid workers in an area that is not seeing active combat, that are in vehicles that is clearly marked as being aid vehicles, and the path that they're traveling on has already been communicated to the Israeli military that that's what they're going to do. It's already been okayed with them. And despite all of that, they're struck, okay? And you can see in this shot, precision strikes. Bear in mind, it's not one accidental hit either. As you can see on this map, they were in like relatively different locations when they were struck, as if this convoy had been previously identified and was now being tracked down across an extended area so that every vehicle that had been in part of this convoy would be destroyed. So at the very least, this is 6 mistakes, 7 mistakes that need to happen, all pointing in the same direction to result in these aid workers being killed. And that is hard to stomach. It's hard to understand. It's so bad that even Joe Biden is speaking out pretty forcefully against it. He says that Israel has not done enough to protect aid workers. I would say that that is true. I would say that that was true months ago. Thank you, Joe Biden, for catching up to the rest of the world. He does say that he is outraged and heartbroken over this. Okay, so those are his feelings. That's good. I want our politicians to have the right feelings and I want them to say the right things. And then 99% of how much I care about all of this is beyond that, what you do about it. And so we will remain waiting, you know, to see what will be done. He says that the investigation from the Israeli government needs to be swift, bring accountability, and its findings must be made public. And I'm on the edge of my seat for what this report is gonna find. What is it gonna find? They said they made mistakes. That's what they said. I'm sure they'll add more details to that. There will be more adjectives. Maybe some, you know, enlisted soldier will be thrown under the bus or something. What will it bring? I don't know. I don't know. Benjamin Netanyahu has taken responsibility for the killings and expressed deep regrets. Okay, that's something. Again, feelings and words, which are better than nothing, slightly not as good as action. How about this? How about stop anything like this happening from now on by dramatically, massively scaling back all of these indiscriminate attacks? You call them precise, but they're killing random innocent people constantly. Thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of them. So maybe don't do that anymore. And then you will not have to take responsibility for the killings. You will not have to experience the regret because there won't be future acts to regret. And the issue is, and we'll get into this in a moment, this is not even a multifaceted singular tragedy. This is just the most recent and perhaps most public example of a type of tragedy of which we've seen many times. And we will get into that, but Sharon, I want to give you a chance to weigh in. What do you think about this?
There's just no escaping this. That is what I think. You just outlined a series of mistakes. You did a great job. There's a lot of those and it must be tough for fellow aid workers, their families, to hear all of that. When you see the logo so prominently displayed, I don't know what they could have done differently. 3 separate precision strikes. If we can't do anything, if we can't do better than this, I guess I should say, then there can't be any more war. What happened to all the technology that was used? Israel and Netanyahu, who, you know, we've got to say, is the person at the top here, is not making Israel any safer here. Every day that this continues, Israel's becoming less safe. There's more people who are perhaps people who weren't ever going to be against Israel, who are now standing up. They've lost loved ones and saying, we can't find the good here. It's urgent to dial this back.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. I mean, urgent is like the best we can hope for at this point. I would say a better time to be urgent was, you know, literally months ago. And unfortunately, this is what we get right now. As I pointed out, this is, you know, it's 7 people for a very notable charity that have died all at the same time. Very notable. It breaks through. And let's pause for 1 second just to acknowledge. I know everybody's doing this, but it can't be done enough. These are people who have already served in multiple areas of disaster, these different workers in multiple war zones. It is amazing sometimes, truly amazing, and deserves a little bit of attention. The breadth of what is possible for a human to be. You know, like sometimes you see like a really short person, a really tall person, and you think, man, humans can really come in very different forms. But morally and ethically, they can come in wildly different forms too. We cover on a daily basis on the Damage Report some of the most fundamentally to their marrow garbage people, almost all of whom hold positions of power and influence and are very, very wealthy people that have never done ever. Singularly, or if you added up every good act that they've done in their life into one big pile, it does not equal out A group of people that see months of random civilian deaths in an area and say, I care so much about the people that are starving there that I'm gonna risk my life to go there. And they lose their life just desperately trying to help people that they don't even know. They can do that. And yet the people that we raise up to the most influential positions in our government, in our economy, in some cases in our culture, have never done the slightest little sliver of any of that. And yet they will live long lives of wealth and power. And these aid workers have died and are being remembered right now and will be remembered by friends and family. It is crazy that all of that is possible all at the same time. But as I said, while these seven deserve to be acknowledged, they are by no means the only aid workers that have died in Gaza. In fact, as of March 20th, at least 196 have been killed there since October 7th. Many of them Palestinian employees of the main UN relief organization there. And the reason that so many have died is because of mistakes, precision strikes on aid convoys and bombing of distribution centers and bombing of schools and bombings of shelters and bombing of refugee camps and bombing of all the sorts of places that civilians and aid workers are supposed to be safe, but never have been from the very beginning of this conflict. And that is how you get literally hundreds of aid workers being killed, amongst, of course, over 32,000 people in total who've been killed in Gaza. And it is consequential that so many aid workers are being killed because, what do you know, in the wake of this, some of the those working for the American Near East Refugee Aid, ANERA, that organization, they are suspending their operation in Gaza, saying that it is simply too dangerous at this point. And that sucks, but you kind of understand it though, don't you? They don't want their workers to be bombed and people desperately need that help. You know, in particular, because the distribution of resources has been made so artificially difficult in Gaza. Did you know a report cited the fact that there were 1,000 containers of flour that had been purchased by the UN Relief and Works Agency for refugees in Palestine, those who had been moved from their homes in Palestine. It was enough to feed 1.5 million people for 5 months. That is a shocking amount of resources. And it had been stuck at a port in Israel for weeks and weeks as people literally starved to death. I don't mean they will starve to death. Sure, lots and lots of people are going to starve to death. They're starving to death now. There is an estimation that I saw that dozens of kids younger than five are already dying of starvation and preventable disease thanks to the breakdown of the infrastructure and the resources. That's not some hypothetical. That's not some, please world, can we act or else this will happen? No, that's already been happening every single day. And look, as I said, obviously I have a massive amount of respect for those who work for the World Central Kitchen and lost their lives. And I think it makes perfect sense that people should be focusing on that. But also remember at the same time, lots and lots and lots of people are dying that you will never see their face and you'll never hear their name and you'll never learn their story. And all of that is happening every single day. So I don't know, like maybe Biden could do more than feel regret. Maybe Netanyahu could do more than take responsibility in some abstract fashion that doesn't modify military strategy. It's frustrating, Sharon. Any other thoughts?
Yeah, it is. Just quickly, military aid provided by, you're right, President Biden's statement after speaking to Chef Andreas was harsh, if you want to look at it in context, but what more can be done? And it's starting to feel like it's by design that we don't know those people who are now associated or soon will be with the word famine. As we hear just sporadic reports of mothers trying to feed their family grass. That's how desperate they are. It's sad. And finally, the privileged people you speak about, it's all that. And the fact that they're living so boldly, so out loud with their privilege while these people are literally dying second by second.
100%. Yeah, you're 100% right. Grass and bird food and chewing on leather just to sort of like get the body's symptoms of hunger to artificially go away for a little bit. And meanwhile, like people who are cheering on the killing are, they're eating fancy meals and they're in the lap of luxury. And we live in a wild world. It's a weird situation we've set up as a species, and that's what's going on. Anyway, we do need to move to other big news in this first section. So we're going to be changing things up, taking our attention back to the United States and some of the legal struggles facing Donald Trump. So let's turn now to that. The special counsel Jack Smith has come out swinging against Judge Eileen Cannon in the classified documents case. He is not happy at all with some of the moves that she's made. And for context, you should understand that Eileen Cannon, who is a judge who was put on in the court, thanks to Donald Trump, has been perfectly willing through the course of this case to make decisions and choices that benefit Donald Trump, but none perhaps as biased as the one that he's responding to now. And it has to do with this. She has, in the recent past, asked the lawyers on the different sides to write jury instructions. So this is how the jury is going to be told to think about what is presented to them about the Presidential Records Act, which you've probably heard a lot about from Donald Trump and Fox News, basically all people who don't know anything about it and don't care, but they think it's a get out of jail free card. So she has said for them to write jury instructions, which says that presidential records belong to the public and are to be turned over to the National Records and Archives and Records Administration at the end of a presidency, but also to craft jury instructions that assume that the PRA allows presidents to designate any documents as personal at the end of a presidency, which is what Trump's legal team has argued that he had the authority to do. And Trump has said he's done. Notably, at least as far as I've seen, his legal team has never claimed in court that he's done it. You know why? Because there's no evidence that he did it. But basically, she then said that they should also write separate jury instructions predicated on the idea that jurists would be able to determine which of the documents he's accused of illegally retaining are personal and which are presidential. So nothing that she said so far means that they're going to pretend that he can declassify all of this by like thinking hard about it and it's totally up to him. But she has left open the door that that's potentially what they could do. Now, no objective legal observer thinks that that's how any of this is supposed to work. And on top of it, again, there's no evidence that he did any of this, that he declassified anything. In fact, Jack Smith has said that he has got many, many witnesses willing to testify that Donald Trump never did any of that stuff and they were in positions to know. And so at this point, we're very worried about Eileen Cannon potentially like slanting the instructions, slanting the jury in a way that sets up for Donald Trump to win this thing when he 100% stole those documents. It is indisputable at this point. I feel very confident in saying that. And I want to give you just a little bit of what the special counsel said. It's in a legal sense the same as kind of like me going on a rant. He's more together, you know, he's a professional or whatever, but here's what he said. The PRA's distinction between personal and presidential records has no bearing on whether a former president's possession of documents containing national defense information is authorized under the Espionage Act. And the PRA should play no role in the jury instructions. Indeed, based on the current record, the PRA should not play any role at trial at all. They've been claiming from the very beginning that the PRA has nothing to do with this. It's the Espionage Act. And honestly, now we're just waiting to find out, is Eileen Cannon going to give Trump his way? Is she going to get her way? Could she potentially be taken off of the case? And even if that happened, and I understand why many people watching might want that to happen because she's been so clearly biased. But if that happened, what sort of delay would that introduce into this thing? And I will remind you that while there are some cases that Trump could not merely snap his fingers and get rid of if he becomes president, this is one of those that very plausibly he could. And so if they replace Eileen Cannon to get a fairer shake from the judge, they may get no shake from the judge because the thing might take too long to finalize. And if Trump becomes president, then that might be it. I apologize, Sharon. There's a lot going on and I've had a lot of caffeine. What do you make of all this?
Well, you're just chugging along. I agree with all of what you've said. And it's not just that she's biased. She's presenting a very dippy judicial argument when she makes them. She also won't make decisions. He's saying, can you just rule on this? So then I can appeal and win. That's how ridiculous it is. Yeah. I love sketch comedy, but it's starting to feel like, when's the mask going to come off from Judge Cannon and it's Jimmy Kimmel? Because it's just not making any sense. You know what I mean? Making zero sense. Stop it. And you're right. Trump's golden either way.
Well, if it is someone behind the mask and they're making absolutely no sense, I think it's unlikely to be Jimmy Kimmel. Has anyone seen Rudy Giuliani recently?
Oh my goodness.
What's he been up to? In any event, one thing that I think is worth pointing out that the producers of the show pointed out is you notice that like Donald Trump doesn't go 10 minutes between messages on Truth Social attacking the judges. He hates the judges, they're unfair. Eileen Cannon, though, he doesn't really seem to have much of a problem with her. And I think we all understand why. In any event, we need to take the first break of the hour. Much more to come on the other side of this, though, so stick around. We'll be right back. Okay, everybody, if you're just joining us now on the live stream, please hit the like button because we're about to jump into more, starting with this.
Because if we don't win on November 5th, I think our country is going to cease to exist. It could be the last election we ever have. I actually mean that. We don't win. I think this could be the last election we ever have. That's where our country's going.
Is that like a prediction? Is that a threat? I mean, he's not like in his high energy mode, but he loves throwing around threats of violence and chaos. So I can't rule it out. Is it a stupid thing to say? Sure, yeah. The idea that the stakes of the election are that if Biden wins, that's it for elections. It's a claim that's kind of undercut by the fact that Biden is president now and we're gonna have an election. Also, you guys don't even think that Biden is gonna be alive in a couple years. How exactly is he gonna maintain a stranglehold on America if he's dead? It doesn't make any sense. No, this is what they do. They pose unique, never before seen in American history, threats to a variety of the different norms and systems that make up our culture, our society, our government. And then after doing that and being criticized for it, they then turn around and say, no, it's actually you guys that do it. See, it's an even playing ground, an even battlefield, but it's not. There is a threat potentially to democracy, but it ain't from Joe Biden winning. It isn't even just from Donald Trump winning. Potentially Donald Trump losing could pose a graver immediate threat to democracy. I will refer you to the results of the 2020 election. But in any event, he does have, I guess, sort of an ace up his sleeve that he's gonna tie into the debunked BS conspiracy theories around Easter that Fox has been spreading all week in this clip.
Such total disrespect to Christians, and November 5th is going to be called something else. You know what it's going to be called? Christian Visibility Day, when Christians turn out in numbers that nobody has ever seen before.
Yeah, so yeah, they love that man in that crowd. Christian Visibility Day, yeah. Because generally you don't see Christian stuff in America. There's like no acknowledgement of Christians. I honestly can't tell you the last time I saw a Christian. I'm pretty sure that in LA, all of their iconography has been banned by Gavin Newsom. But they love that stuff. They love the idea that they should be in charge of everything. Also, they've always historically been in charge of everything. They say, and also largely it's kind of true, but they're also victims. And they need Christian Visibility Day because they've been like pushed into the shadows by society, but they're the strongest, most vigorous political movement. It's a confused mess, Sharon, but what do you make of it?
I was just drifting and watching in that clip the people behind him and wondering, first of all, why no one says to him, what do you mean by that when he says, you know, there'll never be another election? What exactly do you mean by that? But that would be silly to go down that rabbit hole. It's a farce. And I don't think when you're dealing with a narcissist, you can even peel back the many layers. You know, it's just that question of, are you going to put your hand on that leather Bible that you're selling for $60 if you win? And just, you got to leave it at that. I don't know how to handle this. I don't know how to handle the people who actually read the Bible. And if you believe, you believe, I guess. And then turn around and worship this guy. They are worshiping him. There's no getting around it.
100%. And the weird aspect of that, I won't go at length because I know we talk about this constantly, but that like there are true believer Republican candidates who actually believe all of the crazy stuff that they say they believe about Christianity, whether it has any basis in the Bible or anything, whatever. They don't know or care, but they believe it. But Trump doesn't. And they pick the false idol over the true believers. And then worship him more than they agree with those who actually worship the same God as them and believe the nonsense that they've said. I will remind everyone, maybe we'll play it on tomorrow's show. There's a video going around of the Lord's Prayer being said at a thing where Trump is, and he's trying to like mouth along to it. He doesn't know what he's talking about. And by the way, if you don't know the Lord's Prayer, that's fine. I don't know that I could get it right. I'm an atheist though. And the thing about Trump is, so's he. That's why he can't get it right. But again, they'll never see it. They'll never acknowledge it. And in the meantime, maybe he's just a useful tool. I mean, if he gives them the Christian supremacist state, the white Christian supremacist state that they want, maybe it doesn't matter if he believes that all of this is made up. In any event, I want to move on to another horrendous thing that he said. This one coupled with a lie. But first, let's go to the original comment.
The 22-year-old nursing student in Georgia who was barbarically murdered by an illegal alien animal. The Democrats say, please don't call them animals. They're humans. I said, no, they're not humans. They're not humans. They're animals. And Nancy Pelosi told me that. She said, please don't use the word animal, sir, when you're talking about these people. I said, I'll use the word animal because that's what they are. I'll never forget my vow to her.
Okay, so there he is talking about Ruby Garcia. So what he is doing here is what he and his movement have been doing for some time, which is they said, okay, we're an incredibly unpopular political movement. We need to freak people out so they'll get rid of Joe Biden. So let's talk a lot about how scary brown people are and how they're killing everyone. So we're gonna go and Google people who've been killed by migrants, and then we're gonna pretend to give a damn about the fact that they've died. And that's what he's doing here. But he goes a step further than he has in the other cases, because in his extended commentary, we can't play the video for you, unfortunately, it's local news. He talks about Ruby Garcia and he says she lit up that room. And I've heard that from so many people. I spoke to some of her family. And that is where we're gonna have to turn now to commentary from the family, because that apparently isn't true at all. Mavi Garcia says, he did not speak with any of us. So it was kind of shocking seeing that he had said that he had spoke with us and misinforming people on live TV. Nobody really speaks about when Americans do heinous crimes, and it's kind of shocking why he would just bring up illegals. What about Americans who do heinous crimes like that? And that last bit is pretty amazing. I mean, bear in mind, she lost a family member to this sort of crime. And so I understand why when some people have experienced a tragedy like that, even if, you know, before the tragedy, they might not have had certain views, it's easy to just fall into accepting this xenophobic demonizing or whatever. But Mavi Garcia isn't doing that. And so that I think is admirable. But that lie, man, that is wild. Like you, Trump, I don't even know if before that speech he knew who Ruby Garcia is. And I guarantee you that he right now doesn't know who Ruby Garcia is. But in that moment, it wasn't merely enough to use her as a weapon to win him political power before throwing her aside. He had to lie and pretend that this isn't just a thing he's interested in. He's actually central to it because he's gotten some credit for involving himself directly in the victims of crimes committed by migrants before. And so he wants that again. He needs that cred. But he didn't talk to them. He didn't care enough to talk about them. He didn't care enough to think maybe they'll have an issue with me saying that. And you know what? I can speculate. Maybe it's because the last name is Garcia. Maybe he thinks, they don't freaking matter either. So who the hell cares if I talk to them or not? It doesn't matter. I'll just say that I did. No one will listen to them. Well, thankfully, in this case, they are listening to them. It was a ridiculous lie. It should bother way more people than do. And Sharon, I want your thoughts about this.
I guarantee you he has no idea any of the particulars, anything about the family. Also doesn't know the officer slain, Officer Diller in New York. Just inserted himself in people's worst moments. Worst tragedies. I can't quote the Bible either, but just as I was listening, Matthew 7:15, beware false prophets. I think it's pretty self-explanatory. This is what he's doing, and people better wake up. That doesn't offend Christians.
Yeah.
Using someone's murder, a tragedy, where a family member steps up and says, why are you talking about migrants and undocumented? What are you doing?
Yeah.
Nobody, just keep trucking along.
And they don't like the politicization. I mean, I have no idea what Mavi Garcia or Ruby Garcia or the other members of the family, I don't know what their politics is. I don't know who they supported for president before or who they would. But they're experiencing a horrendous tragedy. And I totally respect people who are like, I don't want this being used as fodder for a political campaign. Who the hell are you to use this and then to lie about us? And by the way, as is so often the case, One lie tends to lead to others. When you pretend to have special knowledge, in this case, I talked to them, I learned about her through them, then that could lead to other lies because he has to pretend now that he knew something about Ruby Garcia. And so Matthew Gertz on Twitter pointed out that some of the direct comments that he made about Ruby Garcia appear to be cribbed by a eulogy that was written in the New York Post. He talked about contagious laughter, her lighting up rooms when she walks in. He pretends that he heard that from the family. Whoever wrote the speech just took it from the news article about her. And again, this will not disgust nearly as many people as it should, but it damn sure should. And look, in the past, look, it's not up to me. When he was using Lake and Riley, her murder for his own, the family didn't really seem to mind that. They posed with a photo with him, and it's up to them. If your family member dies and you want it to be used to demonize a group or whatever, that's up to you. You've been through a terrible tragedy. I'm not going to judge you. But apparently his father, or her father in this case, didn't actually like that and says she was much better than that, the politicization of her death. And so, you know, that's a little bit belated considering the way that it was used following the State of the Union and all that. But I like that they're at least criticizing that now, or at least the father is in this case. They're going to be doing this, man. Every day they're Googling, like looking for a murder to pretend to care about. And it's just, it's cheap political games. We should be better than this, but unfortunately we often are not. Donald Trump rightly received a lot of criticism for referring to migrants as animals. It is literally dehumanizing language, and that's what it's meant to do. The interesting thing is that someone else is receiving criticism for him saying that, and it's Newsmax. So Newsmax is a right-wing news outlet. It's a news channel like other ones. They posted this article, so you can see it here over on Twitter. It's an embedded article, and the caption for it says, Donald Trump called immigrants in the United States illegally animals and not human in a speech in Michigan, resorting to the degrading rhetoric he has employed time and again on the campaign trail. Now, that is, at the same time, 100% accurate. It was degrading. It was, that's what it's designed, like we don't want to respect these people as humans. We think of them as animals. That's degrading. That's literally what it does. They were accurate there. And they're going to regret that. Not just that, but also that in the article they linked, there's some fact checking of claims that Donald Trump made in the speech. So they fact check about the rates of crime between native born citizens versus migrants. We've done that a million times. No right winger will ever accept that or care, but they did it in the article. That's great. Also, it said that Trump frequently claims without evidence that migrants have caused a spike in violent crime in US citizens. That, of course, is also not true. There is not actually a crime wave being experienced in large American cities or nationally. There's anecdotal, horrendous crimes that are being focused on by the media. So people have the perception that crime is going up. It's simply not true. They fact check that. Also, the idea that the nations themselves of Latin and South America are sending people is an insane conspiracy theory. That's not how it works. So the backlash against this acknowledgement of fact was vicious, with tweets like, I knew Newsmax couldn't be trusted spreading the same lies as CNN, losers. Or whose side are you on? Biden's, and everyone block Newsmax. And so this was an interesting moment, Sharon. Newsmax has been garbage the entire time, but finally they had an opportunity to stand with the facts. They were right in the claims that they tweeted out against people who demanded that they ignore the facts, ignore the evidence of their eyes, and instead just give in to this need for ideological purity. They had finally earned the right to call themselves a news outlet. And of course, they didn't do that. They backed off 100%. They heavily edited the article, they removed some of the fact checking or whatever, they changed the references in the caption and all that, they backed off. And the thing was, it wasn't even their article originally. They were just spreading something that the Newswire had put out. That's probably why the caption was critical. I don't even think they wrote it in the first place, but the second there was any pushback, they caved. What do you think about that? You've been in news for a long time. I'm sure you've been criticized for things that you've said, but that is an embarrassing way to respond to it.
It is embarrassing. Why not just look the other way? They did it because the article didn't fit the business model. And I assure you, the underpaid staffer who linked it, posted, whatever, is not there anymore, or and probably had to sign an NDA on the way out, you know, making just barely minimum wage. I assure you, there's an NDA somewhere that they were forced to sign and probably being blacklisted. Okay. That's just what they do. Just another day as we follow the Fox model.
It's amazing. Like, the fact checks were true. They just were. You know, I wish we had. Oh, I'm not great at rhetoric, obviously. I wish we had like a thing, like a saying for why when there's a gap between the facts and your feelings, one of them shouldn't care about the other one. But I don't know what it is. But anyway, we should work on something like that. And so, yeah, they ignored the truth to get clout, to have an audience. And that is unfortunately something that a lot of people and outlets do. Newsmax is not above that. By the way, I wanted to also mention just one sort of crossover of this. Fox News, which ran multiple days of like, Biden is trying to cancel Christianity with Trans Visibility Day. I mean, I know it's always been this day, but let's pretend he did it himself. So they had previously, a couple of years ago, acknowledged and celebrated in a tweet Trans Day of Visibility. Fox News had done that. I was actually shocked to see that, but it was true. They did it. Karine Jean-Pierre, the press secretary, she mentioned this in her remarks in the White House. She was talking at length about this BS story and then mentioned that Fox had acknowledged it. Fox ran that video and edited out the portion where she identified that Fox had identified Trans Day of Visibility, which is just like, it should be illegal, I guess. I mean, that's crazy. Like, that is so cowardly. So it wasn't, it's not like Bill O'Reilly wrote the tweet. It's not like Jesse Waters wrote it. It was probably, again, just like an intern or something like that. But who cares? We can't be affiliated with it in any way. So edit it out. And it's insane that they're allowed to get away with that. And I'm sure nobody that watched that will find out. There's been great mashups of the stuff that they cut out on Twitter, but unfortunately, nobody's going to see it. That's just the way it works, Sharon.
Fear rules the day. They successfully scared millions and millions of Americans about some boogeyman out there. Okay. I sleep with my doors unlocked some nights. I'm fine. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm fine. I just don't want someone who's rabid right-wing nonsense coming through it. It's just what it is. And now they're scared of their own shadows. Okay. We've got to take this down. We've got to edit this. Otherwise, we may cease to exist.
Yeah. I have commentary about this. I'm going to save it for the social break because we don't have a lot of time, but I have a lot of thoughts about this clearly. We got more to come. Stick around. Okay, everybody. Against all odds, there is more news, consequential news. I'm going to need you to prepare yourself because this isn't going to be that nice and happy. But let's turn now to this. On the eve of the first of his criminal trials, Donald Trump is getting some surprise good news in the form of polls. New polling from the Wall Street Journal shows that Donald Trump is now leading in 6 of the 7 key swing states, regardless of whether RFK Jr. is on the ballot. And that is kind of the new big wild card, but we're seeing some evidence. Bear in mind, you might say, well, Trump had been leading in the swing states. Sure, he was. Following the State of the Union, though, Joe Biden saw sort of a resurgence. And depending on which poll you look at, the picture can look a little bit different. But the reason that we want to jump into these is not just because it's swing states, but also you have the RFK Jr. factor, and they have a breakdown across different policy areas. And that is the part that I find most interesting. But first, I do want to show you in the three-way race. So this is with RFK Jr. in it. North Carolina, Trump is up by 8. Arizona has him up by 5. Nevada by 4. Pennsylvania by 3. Georgia by 3. Michigan by 2. And Wisconsin is the sole state amongst those where Biden is up by 3 right now. And so that's with RFK Jr. on the poll. Now, we're going to need a lot more polls to really see where the support is being drawn from when he's there. And it might not be the same based across different states or whatever. But as of right now, it looks like his presence on the poll is helping Trump in Georgia by 2 points, North Carolina by 1 point, But in Michigan, he's losing 1 point thanks to RFK Jr. In Wisconsin, he's losing 3 points thanks to RFK Jr. So it is not a massive change regardless. And it's kind of in line with past elections. You know, there generally is 1 to 2 notable third party candidates that are going to get a couple percentage points. He's filling that role right here. But it's interesting that he's helping or hurting depending on what the state is. And so that's the meta picture of the swing states. We'll turn to the different policies in a moment. But Sharon, I don't know if we've really broken down polls before. I understand that some people think that it's premature, and I respect the hell out of that position. But I'm scared, and I like putting numbers to my fear. What do you think about the most recent Wall Street Journal polls?
I like to obsess over them, actually, and I'm having some problems with it too. It's like tread lightly here. Although I did allow myself to be talked into what some of the pundits are saying. Not just that it's within the margin of error, blah, 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 but you don't want to peak too early. And that hit the athlete in me many years ago. Okay. But we would peak just at the right time for, you know, the state championship track meet or nationals. You don't want to peak too early because it's all downhill from there. So that's what I'm telling myself for now.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't know that you were a track athlete. That's really cool. I agree with the philosophy, though. I've always been afraid of peaking too early, which is why I continue to put it off. Someday I will get to it, but for now, it's in the future. In any event, yeah, that's a significant fear. And I know there's a lot of runway left. There's a lot of developments. There's legal stuff. Trust me, I know. We follow it. There's the RNC and the DNC. Hopefully, we'll be there. There's a lot that could happen, but the stakes could not be higher. And so I think a little bit of anxiety is warranted. And thank you to everybody who, regardless of the anxiety, is staying invested in the process. Now, we turn to the actual policies. And here is where it's scarier. Because Trump has a fairly big lead in this Wall Street Journal poll across a wide variety of different policies. So on the economy, he leads by 20, which makes sense. If a far larger percentage of the population are millionaires and billionaires than I thought they were. Border security, he wins by 20, despite the fact that he recently helped tank a border security bill. That was widely reported, apparently didn't cut through. Protecting democracy is one area where Joe Biden still leads by a single point. The guy who launched a coup is trailing by 1 on protecting democracy. I don't think that that poll result means what it seems to mean. I think that people are responding to that with very different ideas about what democracy is, how much it matters, and what movement can be labeled in a totally fact-free fashion as being a democratic movement. I think that's just Trump supporters saying that whatever sort of proto-dictatorship he rules over is still a democracy in perhaps the North Korean fashion. But anyway, you have I was sort of joking there about Biden not leading in anything. He has a bigger lead on abortion, 12 points. So that's good. But across a wide range of other issues, inflation, mental competency, Israel, Hamas, Ukraine, all of that, he's lagging a lot. He's lagging far more on the policies than he is in the actual polls. So maybe that's weirdly good news, kind of, that it's not hurting him more than it is. But Sharon, what do you make of all this?
Form over substance. You know, normally we're taught that substance and these things matter. I think that we have a communication problem if you are leaning towards Biden. It's always been there, you know, it's always been there. And it's ironic for someone they call, you know, compassionate and someone who really knows how to lean in and help people because the message is just garbled or maybe it's overtaken by the other side with the, you know, megaphone and the lies. But you just don't want to get too cute with it. They're tweeting things out, you know, cutesy fashion against Donald Trump, calling him broke Donald and these things. It's true. Mm-hmm. It's true. But the messaging has to get sharper and it's not happening.
Yeah. Yeah, look, we have been trying to keep track of the different aspects of the campaign, of Biden's campaign. So we've been showing you sort of like what the ad spends are, what policies they're focusing on. And abortion is one. We just covered an ad that the Biden campaign had put out just yesterday. And it sort of makes sense. If that's the topic that you're sort of winning on, you're really gonna wanna focus on that. And the fact that you have in states like Florida efforts to put ballot measures having to do with abortion on the ballot to get people out there to vote is important. So this is a complex thing. And not all of that is gonna be you're not going to see it reflected in the polls, but this is a lot of different areas that he needs to do more to reassure people on. Interestingly, as the economy has seen some good numbers over the past few months, he's still very much lagging in that area, including on inflation. And inflation has significantly gone down over the past few months. So there's either they need to message better, or people need more time to sort of maybe catch up to the numbers, or they need to do more to reassure those who are not being benefited by, you know, these sort of macroeconomic shifts or whatever. Lots of people are still being left behind and they feel it. There's a lot that needs to be done across a wide range of issues, and hopefully the Dems and Biden get it together. Okay, with that said, why don't we give a very small update to one of the candidates whose race we're tracking more than others in Congress with this. Representative Lauren Boebert was treated for an acute blood clot in an emergency hospitalization that has been widely reported just over the last day. She apparently was diagnosed with May Thurner syndrome, according to her campaign. They spoke with journalists. She received surgery for it and is now recovering. Lauren Boebert is obviously a very divisive figure when it comes to politics, who has a fairly wild life. That said, this is a serious thing that affects a lot of people. And while I might disagree with Lauren Boebert on virtually every single thing that she's ever said or done, I hope that the politics can be mostly left out of it in this particular case. I'm sure it's a scary thing for the congresswoman, for her supporters, if there are any more, her family members, those sorts of things. And we want to use this as an opportunity to let you know about the thing that she's been diagnosed with. This is a syndrome. It's apparently a fairly rare vascular disorder in which an artery compresses a vein in the pelvis. This compression can cause symptoms in your left or right leg and foot, and may lead to blood clots, as it did in this particular case. And so you can see a variety of different complications that can come from it. It can be difficult to even know that it's happening, both because it's rare, but also because some people don't experience any symptoms. But it can cause swelling of the legs. It can cause DVTs. The blood clots can be perhaps the most significant consequence of that. Blood clots can lead to very serious health consequences, including pulmonary embolisms, heart attacks, and strokes. Basically, depending on where in your body that blood clot eventually settles down and blocks the blood flow, can cause very significant health consequences depending on that. Thankfully, in this case, it does not appear that she experienced any of those worst consequences, but she did experience the blood clots, and that has to be pretty scary. It generally affects women between the ages of 20 and 45. That said, she was treated for it. It's expected that she's going to make a full recovery. And so that's the good news. A bit of a scary thing for the Congresswoman, Sharon. What do you make of it?
I too hope she is going to stay recovered and not have to experience this. As you said, it can be a very serious thing. I even read that, you know, I'm not a doctor, disclaimer, but some of this can be caused by stress, where the blood kind of does different things and cells aggregate in different areas because of stress. So I wish her the best. No, I don't want her in Congress, but it's good when mothers and family members stay well. And so we wish that for her.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, she has a big family. That's got to be very scary for them, 100%. And look, if this is an opportunity, maybe with a high profile person like her experiencing that, you know, maybe it's a thing that people who might be experiencing some of the lighter symptoms of this, if you're in that age range, if you're a woman, then maybe you're experiencing that. Maybe you can get checked out for it. I think that would be a useful thing to come from this. I had not actually seen that stress can be a contributor to it. If that is, then it seems like we would expect more of this even from politicians, because I'm sure it must be a very stressful life, even if you're, you know, Lauren Boebert or whatever. I do want to add just one wrinkle to this, though. George Santos became a part of this story by tweeting this, saying he wants to thank God for the blessing he gave my dear friend Lauren Boebert today. And he talks about the surgery that she underwent, talked about the medical staff and how they're everyday heroes. He says to Lauren and her family, God bless you all and rest up, because you have a lot of fighting to do. And setting aside Lauren Boebert, not attacking her right now. She's recovering from her surgery or whatever. When it comes to George Santos, though, I love that he can acknowledge that the doctors who maybe saved her life, at the very least saved her health, are heroes. And the thing about that is they are, and they have been. And let's never forget that the Republicans spent a couple of years trying to make their lives a living hell, encouraging people to Karen out on them constantly, literally, verbally, and physically assault them, spread conspiracy theories that they were pretending that people were dying to get people all ginned up over the pandemic. That's a thing that happened, and we went through that for literally years, and they are actually heroes who do miraculous work in the vast majority of cases. So again, not trying to make it all political or whatever, but just never forget. In any event, that's all the time we have for the first hour of the show. Thank you to everybody who is listening on the podcast. For those of you listening or watching on the live show, there's a lot more to come in the aftermath, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.